You're listening to SBS News.
Gaga weary bora idna, bora idna, bora idna. Minu belly, yuru belly, ya mudla. Minu belly, yuru belly, ya mudla. Gaga weary bora idna, bora idna, bora idna.
A familiar English nursery rhyme reimagined in the indigenous Bangla language.
So that's just head, shoulders, knees, and we have no word for toes, so we say foot instead. And then it's just, eyes, ears, mouth and nose.
Local members of the community based in South Australia's Eyre Peninsula are behind the revival.
Bowie, Naija Miji Generichids, Nai Bangla Balara, Balana Galanyala. Hello, my name is Jenna Richards and I'm a Bangla woman from Port Lincoln, place of Sweetwater.
Jenna Richards says the process differs from more traditional ways of language learning. It's more about trying to awaken an almost forgotten language.
A language revivalist is somebody who puts the speakers, the communities at the heart of his or her activities, whereas a documentary linguist is somebody who puts the language at the heart of their activities. So revivalistics, in revivalistics, you must look at what the community wants.
That's how Gilad Zuckerman, Professor of Linguistics and Chair of Endangered Languages at the University of Adelaide, describes revivalistics, a neologism he's coined. He says there are different ways of revitalising a language.
The first stage is to identify whether we are talking about a reclamation of a no longer spoken language, as in the case of Hebrew or as in the case of Bangla, or we are talking about revitalization, as in the case of Adnyamatna, for example, which is the language of the Flinders Rangers. It has elders speaking the language, but it has no children speaking the language, unfortunately, maybe just a very small percentage. And the third is reinvigoration of a language that has still many speakers, but it is still endangered. For example, Welsh, for example, Irish. I would put Maori somewhere in between reinvigoration and revitalization, because don't forget one thing, the Aotearoa government or the New Zealand government tried to linguicide Maori.
Professor Zuckerman says many languages have been subjected to linguicide. It's when a language is forced into extinction through a combination of factors, including government policies, as well as a lack of resources for learners. It's what almost happened to Bangla. Miss Richards says her father and his siblings spoke the language as children, but all of that changed when they were removed from their families as part of the Stolen Generations.
They were all sent to Adelaide. So obviously, you know, being in the boys' home and in the girls' home, they weren't allowed to speak their language. You know, it would end in discipline, punishment, if they did. So, you know, out of survival, you know, they had no choice but to. Mum and that would tell them was that they weren't allowed to speak the language. You could end up in jail, you could get killed. It was just another excuse, really, for punishing Aboriginal people for speaking their language.
Professor Zuckerman says revivalistics first looks at what a community wants to do with their language. That can be anything from achieving a high level of fluency to simply having rituals and ceremonies such as weddings and funerals in language. For others, it can take the form of changing street signs or place names. But Professor Zuckerman also acknowledges that for many Australians, knowing the language of their ancestors isn't important.
If they don't care about language, you know, or they don't care about their heritage, then it's a different story. I mean, some people say, you know, I have no heritage, I'm nothing. My heritage is the new Australian or whatever. Well, I mean, this is your decision. I don't think that a person should be forced to have heritage, but I know that many people do care about their past.
The issue, though, for those who do want to learn is one of resources. For many small languages, they simply don't exist. Nick Teeberger is an associate professor of linguistics at Melbourne University. He says what happened to Australia's Indigenous languages over the last couple of hundred years is a common story around the world, spawned by the impact of colonialism.
You know, there could be all kinds of assimilationist story or worse policies. And in Australia, we had the terrible policies of taking children away from families, moving people off their land so that squatters could use their land and miners could use their land. So all of that threatens people's integrity, their cultural integrity, and part of that is their linguistic integrity.
Miss Richards was always curious about the language, fragments of which have survived among the 150 or so members of Port Lincoln's Bungala community and other Aboriginal communities in the region. Her father was active in trying to revive the language, partly based on a Bungala dictionary produced by a German missionary named Clamer Schumann in the 1800s. About 8 years ago, the community also began working with Professor Zuckerman in a series of workshops using the revivalist approach.
What happened with some of the older family who'd come along, they'd say, oh, I know that word. It means this, doesn't it? And they'd be like, how didn't I know that? Or how did I forget that? You know, so that was quite a common theme right across the board, really, where people didn't know that they actually knew their language.
The United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organisation, or UNESCO, says it's impossible to estimate how many languages have disappeared over human history. Today, UNESCO says it's the regions with the greatest linguistic diversity that have the most endangered languages, especially hotspots such as Melanesia, sub-Saharan Africa and South America. But endangered languages can be found in almost every country in the world. Associate Professor Teeberger says in many countries, the loss of a language is often a deliberate process.
It's quite conscious on the part of, you know, major metropolitan societies and languages. There's this idea that to be a modern person, you have to get rid of your traditional language. And of course, we know that's completely wrong, but that seems to be the message that's out there. And so even languages like Gaelic, Welsh, Cornish have all suffered the same fate, and partly it is also because of, you know, land clearances and economic takeover of these smaller cultures.
Ni tu so Australia nan tu du shu tham dal hu tu song wat te to ib ni tu ki ni tu chung we sa ku kala.
And it's happening in Tibet, an autonomous region governed by China. While Tibetan is an official language, Mandarin is widely becoming the language used in the education system. Tibetan schools now mainly teach in Mandarin, with the Chinese government arguing the use of Mandarin is about modernising the region, alleviating poverty and improving literacy. Many children now speak Tibetan as a second language, if at all. Pema Dolka, the executive producer of SBS Radio's Tibetan Language Program, has observed these changes firsthand.
My nephew and niece were speaking Tibetan until they joined childcare, and I know that my dad played an important role because as a grandparent, he put in that extra effort for them to learn Tibetan while they were young. However, as soon as my niece joined childcare, she would come back home and not speak in Tibetan, and she prefers Mandarin, and even like once begged my dad to talk to her in Mandarin. And the question is, how did that happen within a short time, and what does that mean for the future of Tibetan language?
So what does humanity gain by trying to preserve or revive a language? Does it really matter? Associate Professor Teeberger says languages have much to teach us about the complexity of the human experience.
You know, if you consider the length of time that humans have been on Earth, there have probably been tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of languages spoken in the world. And each of them was the product of a whole lot of human interaction with each other and with their environment. So there's a lot of knowledge that people have in their languages, And also the way that languages themselves are constructed tells us something about how it is to be human.
Technology is making it easier for smaller language groups to do this, but Associate Professor Teeberger says linguists and archivists need to do more to ensure any archival material is digitised before it's destroyed for good.
Digital really changes everything. So in the old days we had tapes. Very difficult for tapes to go out to small communities, you know, the places where they were recorded, and to have that equipment. Whereas now everybody has a phone. If we can get digital recordings up on the web in a place that people can locate them, even in the most remote parts of Papua New Guinea or the Pacific, people are able to access recordings in their own language that were made in the 1950s or 60s. And this is really exciting for us to be able to prepare those materials so that people in those places can get access to them.
Ms. Richards says digital technology has made it easier to do this, creating resources for people to use if and when they feel ready to do so.
Not everyone is at that point in their life where they are interested in learning it, which is why, you know, the whole point of developing resources so that if they don't feel like learning it now, well, there's a resource when they do feel the need to pick up the book or, you know, download the app and learn for themselves. Because we can't, you know, we can't force people into learning, but we're welcome for anybody to join when they want to.
And the National Archive of Australia is on a mission to save thousands of hours of audio-visual recordings, some of which include rare Indigenous languages, before the technology to play the old tapes becomes obsolete. Peggy Giacomelos, SBS News.